putting on the Ritz.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, you ready to go?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. All right. Well, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Well, hello, everybody. Good evening for you. And just to reiterate, just some introductions: Jake, Jolene, Patrick, Primo, Todd, and Helen. We all have a little bit of the presentation today, so I'm going to pass it on to Todd, and he's going to go ahead and start discussing everything.
Hello, folks. How's everybody? So basically, I'm going to be talking about the construction, the building, and some of the recovery aspects of our rocket. All right, so what are we tasked to do? We're tasked to build a rocket, construct it, and it has to reach an altitude of 1 mile, 5,280 feet. It has to be able to carry a scientific payload, and we have to be able to return safely and recover safely. So that was for slide 3. If you'd like to reference slide 5, some of our rocket designs, it's going to be 84 inches in length, 4 inches in diameter, approximately 13.9 pounds unloaded. On the pad, it'll be about 20 pounds. We're going to make it out of G10 fiberglass, and it'll have a dual deployment electronic recovery and a Aerotech 560 motor that Patrick will discuss a little later. If you reference slides 10, some of the things about our rocket, we'll be holding electronics in the nose cone. We have an air brake system that we tested with this. This is our 3/8 scale rocket right here. And then we're going to use a three fin trapezoidal design. We went with the three fin. It's ease of construction. The trapezoidal shape allows for no points, so it would be very hardy fins, and no points to break off, easily repairable. And Jolene will discuss the air brake system a little later. So, and then slides 11 through 11 through 15, you can see some of our details on the specs of the nose cone, the drag shoe, and the booster. And I will pass it over to Primo.
Morning, everybody, or good afternoon, I should say. Basically, I'm going to talk about the recovery system, basically the avionics. If you reference slide number 12, I'm sorry, actually slide number 13, we do have the drawing for the payload bay. This is going to house all of our avionics for the recovery system. We are going to be using a dual deployment system with two different units for the recovery. If you reference slide number 22, it gives you a block diagram of a recovery setup. We're using the GWIS HCX as the primary, the perfect flight, which is required for the USLI competition, will be our redundant system, the backup. Both systems will have independent power supplies. Both systems will go to the same pyro charge, 3 grams of black powder for the drogue chute, 4 grams of black powder for the main chute. The drogue chute is going to be a 3-foot chute. That's going to give it a 60 foot per second descent rate at apogee. The main chute is going to have 4 grams which is an 8-foot chute, 96 inches, and that'll give it less than 20 feet per second of descent. We do have five descent phases, basically a boost phase, coast phase, apogee, where the drogue is released, fast descent, and slow descent, when the main is released. Now, in the diagram, we do not have the, or what's not shown are the charge wells to hold the black powder. What else? And that's going to be it for the recovery. And I'm going to pass this on to Patrick, which will talk about our motor selection.
Okay, so if you'll reference slides 6 through 9, we have a few graphs that we put together. We used RockSim to gather the data that we plugged into these graphs. We basically simulated different engines in our rocket and changed the payload mass for each engine. For our rocket, we needed an engine that went above the 1 mile mark, and to get it down to exactly 1 mile, we're going to use our drag shoes to bring it down to that mark. We also needed a motor that didn't go above 6,864 feet, because our max deployment on our drag shoes we have determined to be 30 degrees, and if we selected an engine, or excuse me, a motor that went above that, our drag shoes would not be able to create enough drag on our rocket to bring it down to the 1 mile mark. And Jolene will be talking about the drag shoes now.
Okay, so as far as the drag shoe setting goes, as Pat mentioned, we are only we're only using 30 degrees because it does at 30 degrees it becomes nonlinear, and so we're not going above that. We estimated that with the drag shoes at 90 degrees, it would be able to withstand an 84-pound pressure, 84 pounds of force. So at 30 degrees, we'll be good to go. As you can see, you can reference slide 15, and it gives you a little bit more detail as to the exact construction of our drag shoes. They will be made out of fiberglass, and they are, like I said, very, very strong. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to the payload bay. Actually, I'm going to move on to the electronics. If you'd like to reference slide 11, you notice that our electronics are in the nose cone. Thank you, USLI Workshop in Utah, to Eddie. You guys are the ones who gave us this idea, so we're putting the electronics, which is the GPS and a transceiver, for our actual voice over system, which is why our project's called the Voice from Above, or in Hawaiian, Leo Hano. So, and I can go into that a little bit more if you have any questions on that. Also, which is actually our main project, because it's education outreach, so that's kind of where we got the idea for this. If you'd like to reference slide 12, which is our payload bay, you'll notice that our payload is actually a canister. Helen is going to be putting a payload, carrying a payload in there, and he will discuss that in just a moment. But our canister can hold a project between 3.5 inches wide and 8 1/4 inches in length. And we've calculated that we can hold a mass at 1.2 kilograms, but we can safely carry 1.5. So those are for our education student projects and whatever experiments the schools would like to input into our rocket. With that, I'd like to pass it to Helen.
Hi, I'm Helen from Raposa from Honolulu College, a different college from the rest of this group. If you reference slides 24, 25, and 26, and also 23, the title of the project, for my part, is called Minor Bird 2. That's what I'm calling this particular project. And Minor Bird 2 is its mission type is to just measure and store data. That's all it does. It doesn't do any controlling of things. It does not do any calculations, nor does it transmit data to the ground. So just a self-contained unit, even though it's kind of meant to be ejected off by itself, for this mission, for this team, this payload stays within the rocket, which is okay with me. This thing will, Mindbird 2 will sense acceleration, temperature, and air pressure, and stores all this onto EEPROM, which then, after the flight, it needs to be taken out of the rocket. Data needs to be transferred to a computer and then to be further analyzed by the team. Slide 25, if you reference that. Oh, I'm sorry, back. Yeah. Slide 25 shows the parts list. It's roughly around, even though it shows $162 for the major components, it's getting to a part where it's slightly under $200. There's things like batteries and switches that need to be done for that. So I'm hoping this will be a very low cost project. There's also going to be at least a minimum of 3 units to be built, two for ground testing and a third that actually flies. And if we have more money in the budget, there might be a fourth unit that could actually fly as a backup unit. And slide 26 just shows the diagram of the project. Three sensors, the memory, and a timekeeper chip. So we have at least a timestamp of when the event happens. It's right now, as it stands, it should record about 25 minutes of data per EEPROM chip. Assuming it's sampled at one event per second. I guess that's all I gotta say. So, who's next?
And back to our motor selection real quick. I forgot to mention there were a few motors that fit within our criteria that went above the 1 mile mark, and yet didn't exceed the altitude of 6,864 feet. And the reason we went with the K560 was that we wanted a longer burn time so that our payload would undergo less stress throughout the flight. Also, we chose to go with an Aerotech engine because our team is more familiar with them, and living in Hawaii, shipping them here can be an issue. We're confident in the Aerotech engines, and it's been pretty smooth getting in here in the past. So,
I think that concludes what we have to present. We're ready for any questions that you might have.
Hey guys, this is Chuck.
Hello,
Chuck. Got a couple questions. Let's see. First, guys, I really like the way you put the presentation together. You got a lot of good drawings in here, a lot of sectional drawings, and that's good. A lot of the other teams haven't been providing that to us. We've been kind of scratching our heads trying to figure out, you know, what exactly things look like. So I think that part of it was really good. One thing that seems to be missing a little bit, and you kind of had it a little bit in table form, but some more trajectory data and some values on, you know, what your thrust to weight was going to be, what your velocity was going to be off the end of your rail, and things like that. So can you kind of give us some of those parameters?
You know, my
rocks and data.
The rocks and data.
Rocks and data.
We did do some calculations in RockSim. We're going to see if we can try and find that information for you at this time. We do know that we need to have at least a 10-foot rail. I think in one of our slides we had put 3-foot, but it's actually...
Yeah, I see that. That was one of my questions.
It's actually a 10-foot rail.
I know thrust to weight ratio is 6 right now.
Okay. You know, thrust to weight ratio calculated out to 6, which we need a minimum of 5 to be a stable flight.
And off that 10-foot rail, what was your velocity going to be?
velocity at deployment is 68?
I believe the velocity of deployment was 68.
Is that correct?
No, velocity when it leaves the rail.
Oh, when it leaves the rail?
Oh, that's recovery system. Launch.
But you probably can't get it off of this because this is based on 36 inches, I think.
Yeah.
You're probably okay. I mean, you got a 6-to-1 T over W, so that's pretty good. What's really more important than the thrust to weight is how fast you're going to be going when you're no longer guided by the rail.
That's right.
Correct.
Yeah, this one.
It's for a 36 inch rod.
Yeah, that's 36. Yeah.
Okay. That looks good. What is your, and that's probably in here too, your landing velocity on your parachute is
less than 20. Landing, the landing is going to be less than 20 feet per second. That's the main. Okay. Drogue will be 60 feet per second.
Okay. So landing at 20, that's good. One thing I still don't really understand, and I couldn't quite see it in the drawings, is your brake shoe. How is it deployed and fixed, and what does that mechanism look like?
It's basically.
I think the only thought is kind of a stow configuration. Couldn't see it in a deployed configuration.
It is always at a 30-degree setting, even on the launch.
Okay, if you reference slide number 15, basically the top figure is going to be the brake shoe as a deployment. Basically, we're using a screw to hold it in place or to hold the angle, basically.
Oh, okay, I see.
The max that we're going to have the deployment will be at 30 degrees. That's going to be our max. So we're going to have a range of 0 to 30. Now, in our calculations that we did with our testing, we found out that we do have a ratio of 1 degree. We're losing
1%
per altitude.
It's 1% of altitude per degree deployed. That's what our 3/8 scale model has been showing us on its flights.
Up to 30 degrees.
Yeah. Up to 30 degrees. After that, it goes nonlinear, so they didn't want to deploy more than 30 degrees.
So that is actually manually adjustable, and I guess y'all would do a prediction on launch day based on the atmospheric conditions and set it to a desired.
That is correct.
Yes, that is absolutely correct.
It's going to be pre-configured before launch and set to a certain degree. We're still trying to exactly find out what that degree is going to be. So we do have more testing that we are doing with our 3/8 scale model. Hopefully, when we get our full scale model, we can try to get at least one test flight in with that.
How is that drag shoe held up on the front part of it, where it attaches to your airframe?
It's
the hinge, I guess.
Yeah,
it's basically going to be a metal hinge.
Okay, metal hinge. So you got a metal hinge that's curved to go around your airframe?
Yes. Yeah. Basically, when we looked at the different hinges, basically it would be like a 3-section hinge where we're actually going to have to manually bend it. To fit the curvature of the 4-inch tube, but because it's a 4-inch tube, it's not much bending that we're actually going to have to do.
Okay. Sounds good. Is it a credible failure that one of those shoes could shear off in flight?
Actually, we calculated the force required, or the force, I think Jolene talked about it earlier.
If we had the chutes deployed at a setting of 90 degrees exactly, a combined total of 84 pounds of force would be applied. So we're not going any further than 30 degrees, and so we're calculating that shearing won't happen throughout the flight.
Okay. The chute, does it just rest on top of that pin, or
yes.
Is it fixed to it? Okay, so when you're flying, how do you know you're not going to get some air circulation that comes back around under it and maybe forces it back up? How do you know it's not going to sit flat and not just flutter around?
We've already done that on the scale model testing, and we have not seen that behavior. The other thing is that the aerodynamic forces will be impinging directly down onto it. That's a downward vertical force component. And if we've still been discussing whether it should be fixed or not, my attitude is we could just have it rest there, because when it gets to apogee, sure, it might flap around a bit, but it's not working at that point in time because there's no fluid flow over the shoes.
I think sometimes, and it's not always intuitively obvious, that you can get wraparound flow, and you probably will get a little more pressure growth and a little air wrapping around that fin, getting up inside it than what you might think. I mean, it seems like, well, I've got a lot of pressure on the outside, nothing's going to be on the inside, I'm going to be pulling a vacuum, and I think in actuality it's probably not going to be that way. You might get a little air up in there, and because you're going to be shedding vortices coming off of that.
That's right.
So it's going to be very unstable, and they could try to wrap back around and make it start bouncing, even on the way up. So just something to think about and maybe look at some more as you're doing some more flights and your full scale flight for sure.
That actually was something I was thinking about. The problem is we don't have a fluid flow a CDF program or anything to run here, which would really answer that for me. So the best we could do was with the scale flights. I know it doesn't scale up linearly. I'm aware of that, but
When you start shedding the vortices and you get turbulent, it kind of defies logic. You almost have to go to CFD tools to really know what's going on, because you'll get eddies and it'll start creeping back up, and some really weird things can happen.
We were also considering of bolting it from the outside as well. So that's something else we're going to be testing.
And you might still think about that some more. It kind of strikes me as that would be a little bit more solid design. Or even if you have a little slot up in that shoe, that would allow you, to go to some different angles.
Right.
It might be good if you can kind of tighten it down a little bit. But, just something to think about.
All right,
sir.
Probably be easier to adjust too, because that way the screw heads outside.
Let me ask you about the payload. What sampling rate are you going to be taking data at?
That would be at least one event per second.
One event per second?
Yeah.
And you're just going to be taking data on the way down?
No. It's going to be starting when the rocket is on the pad. So they'll be taking data on the pad, on the flight up, and on the flight down.
And you'll take samples at 1 second, you said?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have enough memory there to last the whole hour? Like, if you have to sit on a pad for an hour before you launch, or do you
right,
have a way
right,
to...
Right now, I'm using two memory chips that would give me about 25 minutes per chip, so I would have to probably add a third. Do that.
Yeah. It's cutting it close, so
yes.
It's probably worthwhile keeping that in mind.
Hey guys, this is Eddie.
Hey, Eddie.
Just kind of bouncing off what he just asked, it is a requirement in the competition to have a pad stay time of at least 1 hour. So just kind of be aware of that. I know you guys just mentioned that with the current configuration of the payload and the power sources, it may only be 50 minutes or so. So you may have to make some adjustments accordingly to get that pad stay time up to an hour.
Okay.
Or at least an hour.
The power should not be a problem. I did previous projects for this group in the past, and this particular project drains less power than my previous project for them. So power is not going to be a problem. Memory will not be a problem. My major concern is fitting in the physical space I have available. So if I have to change things out, I may take out one temperature sensor to put in more memory, which is okay with me.
Okay. I had one other question. I was looking at your schematic, and I didn't mark which page it was in your CDR report, but it showed a schematic with your electronics for recovery, your two altimeters, your switches, and your power sources.
That'd be page 18
of
the CDR.
Okay. It looked like you guys had two matches from each altimeter going into a single well for your black powder, is that correct?
No, there'd be two separate wells, one well for the drogue chute and one well for the main chute, but both altimeters are going to each one. So if one doesn't fire, the other one will. So I'm not sure what your question was. Is it two E-matches in one well?
Yes, are you going to have two matches in one well for the main parachute and the drogue parachute?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a reason, since you have two altimeters with two E-matches, that you're not using two charges for the main parachute, two charges for the drogue?
This is a system that we're familiar with. The other thing is that if you have two separate pyros, you're actually, for example, your drogue now, you actually are lifting off 6 grams of black powder. One pyro goes off, and we can put them in separate wells. So the chance of the other one going off is not all that large. But generally, what happens is gunpowder is pretty reliant. Black powder is pretty reliant. So if you have your two separate E matches going to the same charge, I thought that would accomplish the same outcome.
It's actually going to be about safety too. If you have your rocket going up with two, let's say you have the two separate black powder charges, you don't want your rocket to come down with one that hasn't discharged. So basically, if you have one black powder well with two matches going to the same well, one E match can go off and set that charge off. If that one doesn't work, the other one should work and set that charge off. Okay, but the idea is you're going to remove the black powder, when it's up in the air and not have it when it comes down. So we don't want to have the black powder when it comes down. So that's why it's one well for the black powder charge, but two systems going to the same charge.
Okay, and those are all pretty good points. We do still usually recommend that for complete redundancy, you do have two separate charges for a couple of different reasons. One, if there's a breach in that single well for whatever reason and you lose your black powder, now even though you have two matches, you have no
black powder
ejection charge at all.
Okay.
And also with two separate charges for your main parachute, you can offset the altitudes at which you deploy your main. So you can have one charge go off at, just for an example, 500 feet, and then your next charge go off at,
450,
700 feet, and then another charge at 500 feet. And you can actually also increase the size of your backup charge just in case if for whatever reason your first charge didn't completely deploy your parachute, you have a little bit bigger kick as a backup.
Okay.
So, and we're certainly not saying no to one single well, but we still kind of consider it short of complete redundancy. And actually, a lot of teams have asked this question. I actually went home the other night and put two altimeters in a vacuum chamber that I made at the house and pulled a vacuum. And I pulled it several times, and I never saw both altimeters light up my little LED lights at the same time. Sometimes the difference was as much as a second and a half or 2 seconds. So I doubt there's much chance of two charges going off at exactly the same time at apogee. And then, by having two charges for your main parachute, you can offset the altitude at which you deploy and then actually increase the charge of your backup charge. It's just a what-if, backup plan. I kind of like the idea of blow it up or blow it out.
So. Okay.
Hey, more pyrotechnics.
Sorry.
We're certainly not saying no. We're just saying kind of think about it.
Okay.
Just in our minds, one single well is not completely unacceptable, but we still kind of think it's a little short of complete redundancy. So, just a thought.
Okay.
Sounds good to me. I like blowing up stuff.
Yeah, I don't mind the bangs. More bangs coming down. hey.
Well, and the thing is, we'd rather you guys blow an airframe apart as opposed to coming in ballistic. because then you've separated, you have two separate pieces coming down by a strap cord, which is better than a long dart. So,
true.
So what happened to me?
Just food for thought, that's all.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, I noticed that your rock simulation that you did have in here, did that for 2 miles per hour for high wind speed. I think we've been telling teams that to expect probably 10 miles an hour this year, or potentially more due to El Nino. So you might want to run that a little higher.
Okay.
And this is Chuck again. I know you guys have good plans to get everything built and get your full-scale rocket flown. This is something I've been telling all the teams, and I'll tell you guys the same thing. It is a hard requirement for the competition here that the full-scale rocket has to have flown before coming to Huntsville, and the recovery system has to have worked as planned. You know, so we just want to make sure that we have a good flight, and you know, there's a lot less risk here at Huntsville because we have a lot of non-rocket people here, so it's not your typical lot. So that is a hard requirement. So I know you got a lot of plans and to fly. Just you know, make sure you stay busy, get it built, and get it flown.
Okay,
hopefully your weather is better than our weather here, and then it didn't land in the ocean.
Our weather's been horrible.
This is Dave Bishop. I just had kind of a question more out of curiosity on my own. On your scale rockets, when we were talking about how the shoes could flutter a little bit, I was just curious if you had a video camera in there looking at them, because you said you didn't notice any kind of flutter in the shoes. So I was just curious if you were just visually trying to see it or if you actually had a video.
No, right now it's just been visual tracking. We got a lot of eyes looking at it when it goes up.
I'm just more curious for myself than anything else.
But you know, one of the things that we've been thinking about doing, and we didn't include it in our CDR, but we've actually thought about maybe mounting a small video camera just to see if everything does what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, I believe it was Utah State last year that had a speed break on theirs, that they had a nice video of the flight looking down towards the break. So
I have that video.
Ours isn't quite as fancy.
Yeah, we're keeping it very, very simple.
Yeah. I was just more curious, like I said.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you guys have any more questions for us until we...
Yeah, I do.
My question is, this 1 hour, is it 1 hour on the pad or 1 hour including time on the pad and the flight as well?
It needs to be at least 1 hour for sitting on the pad. But, you know, after you turn on all your electronics, your data loggers, and everything for deployment and whatnot, you need to be able to walk away, and it all still needs to work an hour later at least.
So I guess if I plan to store an hour and 30 minutes, I should do that?
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely give yourself a little margin of safety because sometimes, you know, you can put your rocket on the pad and have it all ready to go, and there can be several other teams kind of tinkering with their stuff.
Okay.
Or we could have some weather move in, clouds, an airplane, whatever it may be. So that just gives you guys a buffer to, so that you can still sit on the pad and still be good to go quite a while later.
Okay.
Anything else?
Do you have any other suggestions for us that would help us with our reports or how we proceed?
I thought you did a pretty good job. I love that you had a lot of drawings in here and sectionals. That's really good stuff because we can see it and get a good idea of how things go together. That's one thing you guys did really well that a lot of other teams didn't. One area you might have been a little weaker on was some trajectory curves. Didn't really see, you know, altitude and velocity and acceleration versus time, you know, for maybe some different, in your case, you know, different shoe angles and stuff like that. We did not see, and I don't know if you posted it later, and we just didn't get it, but didn't get the fly sheet. that, you know, it's just the one pager with all the parameters on it.
It was posted late. I'm sorry, that was my screw up. It was posted a few days later. Julie asked for it, and we sent it up with an update. The only problem was we couldn't go in and change. There was the motor retention system. We couldn't get in there to change it and tell you that we were going to be using an Aeropack one.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my mistake. I accidentally left that cell locked before I sent it.
Okay. Well, we're using an Aeropack system. Commercial.
Okay. Good deal.
One other thing that would be good to have, you know, in your CDR, but definitely in your FRR, is have some discussion of the launch pad, you know, on the rail and what the center of gravity of your rocket is when it's on that rail. I assume you guys probably are not bringing your own launch pad with you. So whoever you plan to borrow from, you know, talk to them and, you know what their pad looks like. And since you guys are going to be using it, you need to report back to us, you know, what that launch equipment's going to look like.
Okay.
But don't think you need electrical launch equipment. We provide that. We're just asking the college teams to provide their own pad.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Just a nitpick on the presentation.
Oh, please do.
It seemed like y'all jumped around when y'all were presenting. It'd be good if y'all had all the slides in the order y'all were going to present in.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
From the payload, it was very helpful to have this electronic block diagram here for us.
Oh, thank you.
We don't always get those, so I appreciated that as well as the detail on the parts list.
Thank you.
Okay. I think that's pretty much it, unless you guys have anything else.
We're good.
We're good.
Thanks, Eddie.
Hey, Jacob.
Yeah.
Jacob, can you send me the link to your website one more time? I know Julie has the right link, but I think mine may not be right because I couldn't get to your website earlier. You'll do that for me.
Okay. All right.
We appreciate it, guys. Just a couple quick reminders. As you're doing your outreach activities, be sure to send back in those educational engagement forms.
Yeah, we've been a little slow on that.
No, it's fine. We just need them before you guys come to launch week, because that's how we're going to grade the outreach award this year.
Absolutely, I'll get those up for you, Eddie.
Okay, and if you haven't done so already, be sure to turn in your talent release forms back to us.
They'll be on the site.
Okay. Yeah, we need those as soon as we can to get those over to legal.
Do you want us to mail them, or do you want the? Because I basically printed it out, signed them, scanned them, and put them on the site. Or do you need the actual signature copies?
No, that's fine. You can fax those to us.
Okay.
Or,
it's on the.
Put them on your website.
Yes.
You should be able to get them off there.
Okay.
That's fine.
Good.
Okay. Good deal. Well, I guess that's it, guys.
Excuse me. Actually, one more thing. We were just looking, and we were trying to find a budget for the price of the rocket. We saw one for the payload, but we didn't really see one for the rocket.
Well, right now we've just started acquiring parts, and we're trying to go through the invoice. We put in a large order to Hawk Mountain, and we got a whole bunch of the parts in. But we have not been able to keep exact track of it. But right now, we're up at about $1,600. That's how much that one came out to for the parts. And we bought the HCX unit, which was going for $650. And the Perfect Flight MWADS was at $240. So that's about where we're at right now. We are going to probably post that information up to the site as soon as we've gone back through the invoices and actually calculated what the price was.
Yeah, a lot of teams went ahead and just, you know, put an estimate in there of what they plan to spend, and then track, you know, compare how far along you are and stuff.
Okay.
And hey guys, on that note, that $240 for your Perfect Flight, did that include shipping?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, for what sits on the pad, just put the retail price. Don't worry about shipping, because that kind of hoses you guys.
Yeah, it really does.
you're just a little further than most teams. So, don't Don't worry about that. No, okay. We can't hold that against you. So.
All right. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Jolene, tell your mom I said hello.
I will. I will. She'll be happy to hear that we saw you guys. So.
Okay. Good deal. We appreciate it, guys. I'll send you an electronic copy of the comments and questions you got today, and just so you can have those for moving on to FRR, and I guess we'll talk to you guys then.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eddie.
Thanks, Eddie.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. See you.
Here.
Yep. I gotta go.
Good job, people.
Good job.
Yeah, we really needed to do a presentation, mock presentation before we actually have it due, so that when we go through, we can actually put the slides in order.
Yeah, we were worried about getting the CDR on.
Should have been done earlier.
Yep. Okay, guys, I'll see you guys later.
Bye.
I gotta go.
You
got
time?
Sorry?
Are you going back to work? Thank you.